You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.
This is Rod Adams, and it's time for Atomic Show number 100. And for a special show this evening, I have two guests with me, Paul Lorenzini and Jose Reyes. And Paul and Jose are two people that put the lie to Amory Levin's continued repeated remarks that says that there's no private money in nuclear power, because they are the leaders of the effort for New Scale Power, a venture-funded power production company that is planning to build 45-megawatt electric nuclear power plants. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I really didn't do my homework here, although I know a little bit about both of you. Paul and Jose, if you could, in that order, introduce yourselves and tell the audience a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I'm Paul Lorenzini. I'm coming out of retirement. I spent 17 years with Rockwell International, eight of it at the Hanford site in eastern Washington, and 13 years at Pacific Corp. I was president of Pacific Power and Light for a while. I was CEO of a company that we had in Australia, Power Corp. I retired in 2000, but I'm also a graduate of Oregon State, and I've been following the progress of the work that they've been doing on this small nuclear plant. I've been very excited about it, and so a year ago, Jose and I had a conversation about how we might take this company public, commercial, and I agreed to come out of retirement and head the company, and so we formed the company New Scale Power, and we were successful in negotiating a technology transfer agreement with Oregon State in November. We got our first financing in January, and we are off and running.
And then I'm Jose Reyes, and I'm the Chief Technical Officer of New Scale Power. And prior to joining Oregon State, actually I worked with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for almost 10 years. I was in their reactor safety group and thermal hydraulics, and then joined Oregon State University about 20 years ago, back in 1987, so I guess it was about 21 years now. And while at Oregon State University, we developed this this concept for a small modular power reactor as part of this grant. We were very excited to be working with Paul, because Paul brings a lot of energy and a lot of experience to the company. We are moving forward very rapidly, and we're excited about the potential markets that we see out there looking for our type of technology.
That sounds great. Now, tell us a little bit about the specific technology that you're using here.
It's a pressurized water reactor. And there are really two things that define the design. The first is it's small enough to be entirely prefabricated off-site and shipped to the site by rail, truck, or barge. The entire nuclear steam supply system, including the containment, is 60 feet long by 15 feet in diameter, weighs about 300 tons. And as I said, it can be prefabricated and shipped to the site. The second key feature is the plant is cooled by natural circulation, which means two things. The first is it eliminates pumps, pipes, valves, the electrical systems that have to supply the pumps, pipes, and valves. And so it produces a simple system that's got economic advantages because of its simplicity. But the other feature is that the natural circulation system is very, very robust. We've eliminated failure modes. We've eliminated the large break loca. We've looked at the small break locas and don't find ways that the core can be uncovered, because the way the whole plant is configured, it's in a pool of water. So if there's a leak or a valve opens inappropriately, it stays within the system and there's no place for the water to go. So it's a very, very safe plant.
Now, for I'll give a little aside for those listeners who are not professional nukes. A LOCA is a loss of coolant accident. That's usually the limiting design case accident that would cause a core meltdown type accident in a light water reactor. Okay, and so one of the things about your plant being as small as it is, it appears that you're avoiding some cues that are setting up in the world these days.
That's right. As you know, there are pinch points that constrain the ability to build a large number of nuclear plants. One of the major ones is the vessels are thick enough that they require very unique requirements for the forgings. And there's only one place in the world that can be done, and it's Japan Steelworks. And they can do 4 to 5 a year. They're hoping to expand to maybe 8 a year. But it's a global choke point. And so people get in line and they have to try to get their vessel forged so that they can build their plant. Our plant is small enough that the entire plant can be fabricated by domestic mid-range manufacturer, so we eliminate that problem. Secondly, one of the other choke points is the need for the suppliers and sub-suppliers. We'll still need suppliers and sub-suppliers that are qualified, but because we've eliminated the pumps and the pipes and the valves and hydrogen recombiners and a lot of the other equipment, we don't need as many of them. So we avoid that problem as well. And then finally, because the manufacturing is done off-site, it limits the demand for on-site construction workers, which simplifies the construction process, but also gets us through that construction process without the limitation of the unavailability of some of those workers.
Also, with having a factory constructed machine, it seems like you can get your workers more specially trained and be able to retain them from unit to unit rather than the kind of mobile workforce that you have in a site construction.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big features is our method of refueling, especially in a plant where we have multiple modules, is really quite unique. What we can do is if let's say we have a 12-module plant, we can shut down one module at a time for refueling. And so we're only removing 45 megawatts electric from the grid, which is essentially an online refueling process. So it's a significant advantage. What it also allows us to do is to reduce the number of staff required for refueling outages. So we can have a small, dedicated team of professionals who are doing the refuelings on a regular basis. They're well-trained because they're doing it frequently. And by staggering our refueling, we're doing this on a regular basis in a manner that really minimizes the amount of staff required to on these refueling outages.
Ultimately, our goal would be if it's a plant with enough modules, the on-site staff would be able to be trained to do the refueling, so you don't wind up bringing in these large cadres of workers from around the country to do the staffing that's required for refueling in the bigger plants.
So as you conceive your system today, you would put a lot of modules on the same site and basically build up a fairly significant baseload generation at one site?
Well, it's a customer-driven kind of thing. Because of the modularity, we've got some customers that would be interested in a one or two module installation. We've got other customers that would be interested in putting 4 or 5 or 6 modules in and then adding modules as their load grows, so that we can number up to reach just about any capacity that a customer would want to have. And then there are other customers that are looking at it as a different way to achieve high capacity demands.
Now, Jose, you mentioned that you spent some time with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. What kind of licensing strategy do you have? There's a certain components of the licensing process that may be a little different for this smaller plant.
Well, actually, we found that we have some significant advantages in our approach because it is light water, so that's a huge advantage. The safety analysis codes all exist. There's been over $1.5 billion worth of research at DOE and NRC on light water reactors, so it's very well understood. We went through our safety review plan for the NRC, and we identified only a handful of sections where we need to address some of the multi-module issues. But out of the 255 sections or so that we looked at, about 13, only 13 had to be looked at for a multi-module approach. Our licensing approach is to work with the validated safety analysis codes for our to develop our evaluation model. We also have a one-third scale, full pressure, full temperature test facility. So we actually have built a one-third scale version of our plant that includes the reactor vessel, all the internals, the helical coil steam generator, the containment, and the external cooling pool. We've actually built that one-third scale. We're using electrical heaters to simulate the nuclear heat. It's running at Oregon State University, and we'll be using that as part of our support for our certification testing. So I think we'll be able to also benchmark these safety analysis codes against realistic data, and that goes a long way to helping us in our certification effort. So I think we can provide a very strong level of support for our safety approach. And as we look through the regulatory framework, we really believe that the regulatory framework exists to license our plan.
One of the keys for us is that the licensing is not complicated. It can be licensed within the existing framework used for light water reactors, and so the pathway through licensing is much more straightforward for us.
Do you think the pathway will take you as long as the large reactors that are being estimated at about 42 months?
Well, that's anybody's guess, of course, but our expectation is that it won't. And the reason is because the plant is as simple as it is, and the elimination of the large break loss of cooling accident, for example, removes a whole part of the licensing process. It takes a lot of time for these bigger plants. So we're hopeful that our pathway won't be as complex. But on the other hand, we do have other issues that we do raise because we've got many modules that are operating at the same site. So we'll just have to see. But our expectation is that it won't take as long.
One of the challenges that I've recognized for all people who are interested in small plants is the licensing fee structure is set up for the assumption that all plants are about the same size. As far as I can read the license regulations, the annual fee is a per power reactor fee. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes. In our meeting with the NRC a week and a half ago, we identified a couple of legal issues, and one of them was that issue. The current structure envisions fees on a per-reactor basis. That will have to change. That issue came up when the pebble bed reactor was talking to the NRC a few years ago, and I think there's an understanding on the part of the NRC that needs to change. It needs to be a commission decision, so there's a process they have to go through. They haven't gone through it yet, but we expect that will be something that we won't have a problem with.
Now, that change can be made without any legislative action, right?
That's correct. It's a decision that the NRC Commission can make.
Very good. Now, Jose, can you give us a little history as to when this project started and how long you've been working on this?
Sure, yeah. We really got into this in earnest in around year 2000. It was a grant from the Department of Energy. It was the Nuclear Energy Research Initiative. We worked on that from 2000 to 2003. And we were working with Idaho National Lab and with Nexent, which is a subsidiary of Bechtel. And so the three organizations worked together to develop this very simple concept. At the end of 2003, we issued, DOE issued reports on what we had done. It included an initial design. It also included the development of our test facility, some initial testing that was done there. at the end of that that period, we actually concluded the work for DOE. And as we looked at the design, Oregon State University felt that there was significant advantages to the design, enough to where we continued working on it. So internally, OSU continued working on the design. We've developed several major improvements to the design that makes it a much much better concept. Since then, we've gotten patents on several features of the improvement.
We don't have patents. We're filing for patents.
Well, that's right. We've actually filed for patents on three or four different areas. So that's in progress right now. What OSU did then was we're seeing a real difference in trends at universities, and ours is really now on the forefront. The College of Engineering is looking at ways in which these types of inventions can get to market. And so they're promoting that, they're encouraging that, and that's how they connected us actually with Paul, in a sense of having him come in early on as a business mentor for our group. So the College of Engineering really supports the idea that if you have a great concept, they want to help you move it from the lab to the market. The technology was transferred to our company, NuScale Power, and I think Paul mentioned already how that came about. With our first funding and the company being set up, we've made great progress since the company started back in July of 2007. We've hired quite a few employees, and we've actually developed a real strategic partnership, and maybe Paul can tell you a little bit about that. But in terms of the research and the development, we've really done quite a bit of research. We've worked on it for about 8 years since 2000. And have made some great strides in the design. We think it's a really good design.
Yeah, Paul, could you talk about some of the partnerships?
Well, we did early on was we recognized that for us to be successful, there were a number of areas of expertise that we needed to bring in, and so we've arranged for Sudzik to do our core design. We've got Mohammed Madaris, who did the probabilistic risk assessment for the AP1000, to do their probabilistic risk assessment. But one of the big keys was an agreement that we reached with Peter Kiewit Company. And Peter Kiewit has agreed to work with us as a partner to do the engineering on the balance of plant, to be our constructor. And that's a very significant piece for us because as we go to customers, it's important for them to know that we've got the capability to deliver. So that Kiewit partnership has been a real big step for us.
Yeah, one of the things that I found out about Peter Kiewit, which has been around an awful long time, is they've actually built a small nuclear power plant before.
Well, they built Fort Calhoun. They worked on some other plants that didn't get finished. But they've been around for 120 years. They're not publicly traded, so they don't necessarily get the same press that other companies do. But they're very, very successful. They're very well respected. And when you talk to them, they've done a lot of work in power plant construction. They've done a lot of work in other fields as well. But when we go out and talk in the industry and mention that we're partnered with them, we get a good response.
Yeah, they were the prime contractor for the SM-1A, which was four megawatt electric nuclear plant at Fort Greeley, Alaska.
Yeah, that's right. I did read that. I think I might have read it in your column.
Well, I like to do a little research, but I actually met someone for Kiewit quite a while ago and chatted with them, and they mentioned this. And unfortunately, I think that the company records of that project was limited to about two or three news articles that announced the construction. But just an interesting aside. So what are your target markets right now? Do you think they're going to be the multi-module, or are they going to be some folks that want just one or two?
I think it's going to be both. We've had people call us from all over the world that have had an interest in how our plant might fit into their particular situation. We've had people from industry that have contacted us. We've got people in remote locations. And we've also talked to major utilities in the United States. So we think that it's got applications in all of those areas. Our first pathway to the market is through the NRC, so that sort of implies a domestic customer. But we've got customers that are domestic and non-domestic that have expressed an interest in our plant. It, once we get a certification from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that's the kind of a international gold stamp of approval that opens up a lot of markets for us.
Now, there was an interview or a speech, I guess, made by Dale Klein just about a week or so ago where he talked about small reactor plants and mentioned his support of the idea, but he also said that the NRC is not really that interested until somebody comes with a domestic customer who says they're ready to buy.
It's going to be important for us to come to them with a customer. We started the process of meeting with them to prepare our design certification application, and they've provided enough resource to help us through that process. But they have indicated that for them to put us in line to review the design certification, we'll need to have a customer. It's unfortunate because that process, when it was first conceived, was aimed at allowing new plant designs to go through the NRC process to get certified and then find customers. Right now the demand on their resources is so high because they have all of these construction operating license applications in for the larger plants, but they're really constrained in what they can do. And so they've imposed that as a way to prioritize their resources. But our hope and expectation is that when it comes time for us to submit our design certification, we'll have a customer with us. But that's the situation that they're working in right now.
Yeah, that is, like you said, that's really kind of a different philosophy than what the original idea of a site license and design certification process was supposed to provide for the vendors. But I guess when you have limited resources, and unfortunately the NRC resources are something that doesn't change very rapidly because they're still constrained by the two-year in advance budget submission cycle in the federal government.
Well, it's the budget submission cycle, but in addition to that, they have to get the funds from Congress up front in order to hire the staff, and ultimately we would reimburse them for the time they spend reviewing our license, but the cycle has to begin with them getting the resources to hire the staff to do the reviews in the first place, so it's a vicious cycle.
Yes, and of course that reimbursement to the NRC is one of your probably larger preliminary expenses.
Actually, if you look at our cost, the reimbursement to the NRC is probably about a third of what we've set aside to get us through the first 6 years.
Now, can you give an estimate as to what the per kilowatt capacity cost of one of your systems is going to be?
Everybody asks us that, and I'd love to give a number. Obviously, we believe that the cost is going to be competitive. And if you do extrapolations from the study that was done in 2003, you can come up with some very, very attractive numbers. The problem is that there are numbers all over the map, and as you know, the numbers have been unreliable. So what we are doing right now is working with Kiewit. Kiewit has agreed to do a bottoms-up cost estimate, and this is one of the things they really do well. We're fleshing out the details of the balance of plant, the details of the manufacturing processes, and we're expecting to come up with a cost estimate around October. When we do that, we're going to be in a position to be able, we'll have a number we're confident in, and we'll have a number that we can take to the marketplace. We've just been reluctant to speculate at a specific number until we complete that process, even though I would say we're very confident that we're going to come up with a competitive number.
Yeah, I fully understand that because doing cost estimating was one of my careers over the years, and it's very, very hard until you actually can lock down the design and actually talk to the vendors that you want to use. It's challenging.
Well, and it's easy to come up with numbers, and people throw numbers around. My view is if you start doing that and then you have to spend your time later apologizing for the numbers, you haven't really helped anybody. So our view is let's wait until we've got good, solid numbers, and when we do, then we'll go talk about them.
Understood. Now, when you say competitive, the power market is not anywhere near as uniform as some people might think, because, I mean, even within the U.S., we have some states where the average price of power is 6 or 7 cents a kilowatt hour, and other states where it's getting close to 30 cents a kilowatt hour. Where do you want to be competitive?
Well, that's a hard question, just for the reason that you gave. Obviously, we could be competitive if it was $30 a kilowatt, but
30 cents, not $30, but
30 cents, right? But if you look at the marketplace, utilities are struggling right now. They're overextended on natural gas, and they've got the threat of supplies, prices, and a carbon tax. They're having a problem building coal plants and getting coal plants approved. There's a limit on how much they can get done with renewables. There's a lot of interest in building nuclear plants. But nuclear plants are having some of the issues that you know about in terms of prices and so forth. So we think in that mix that there are customers out there that will like what we have to offer. And if we can get a price that looks attractive to them compared to the alternatives they have, and you're right, if we're in the Midwest, the coal prices are going to be different than they are in other parts of the country. The same is true for gas prices as you go around the country. It's going to be a different situation for each utility or for each potential customer, whoever they might be. We think we can put together a case that would argue that our approach is an economic approach for them.
It would seem to me that based on your factory construction or factory manufacturing, your price is going to not vary as much geographically as many other types of power systems. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think that's true, although transportation is going to be a cost for us because of the way we're doing it, and so location will matter from that standpoint. But the other thing I think is that because of the way we'll be building our plants, manufacturing, each module the same way at the same place, it's going to give us an ability to have price certainty that I think will be a real advantage for us.
Now, going back a little bit to the technology, I think I read that your fuel design is very similar to what a conventional light water reactor would have, except for the fact that the rods aren't quite as long.
Right, yeah, we're looking at a reduced height core, probably about half height, we're looking at a range of fuel arrays. The simplest core design we have right now is just a 24 17 by 17 assemblies. So these are basically standard light water reactor fuel for a PWR. So the advantage to that is that we like the fact that these are things that are readily available. Doesn't require a new technology or a new fuel. So we've stuck to a tried and true design. However, we have some other designs which we're looking at also, which would allow maybe a little bit more efficiency and less leakage in our cores. That we're working with Cord Smith at Studsvik, and that of course how we refuel, how often refuel, boration, that all that kind of thing we're looking at right now and optimizing that core to give us maximum performance. So we could run with off the shelf fuel right now, but we are doing some optimization.
So just out of curiosity, do you have any jobs available for people who aren't from OSU?
Yeah, we've actually hired a few folks who are not from OSU. I think our drawing card though is that if for those who've been to Corvallis and have lived here and they like the coast or they like the mountains, it's a pretty easy sell to get them to come out. But if you've never been here and you're not sure what's in Oregon, I think that those are the cases we have challenges with.
Yeah, I guess what I would say is we're interested in hiring any really good person that would like to come to work for us. It just happens that a lot of Oregon State people know us. They know Jose. They like the area, and so they just have come to us and wanted to come to work for us. But we're open to a lot of qualified people.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Well, let's see. Anything else that you would like to mention before we close this off? I'm excited. I think that this is something that the country and the world really needs is a new choice and a new scale for nuclear power.
Yeah, and I guess if I were to add something, I would spin off of that thought. If you look at our national approach to deploying nuclear power, there's a lot of focus on supporting the large light water reactors, as there should be. And there's money being spent on advanced reactors that aren't going to be here for a long time. But in the middle, you've got these small reactors, and right now, there just is no support for them at all. There are a lot of reasons for that. Some of it may be that we just haven't told our story to the right people, but there's a hole there that needs to be filled. I believe, as you do, that if there were the right kind of support for small reactors within the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as well as within the funding agencies, you would see an ability to create a more penetration of nuclear power into the marketplace, which would be a good thing from the standpoint of producing stable energy supplies.
I guess I do have one more question. I pull my nickel back. Once you get your plant licensed and you're ready to start building, how long do you think it'll take to build each unit? Obviously, the first one's going to take longer. The second one will take a little less. Once you're in production, how long do you think it'll take to produce a unit?
Well, there's two ways to answer that question. One is, how long is it going to take to line up all the materials and to get, you know, there's a whole international issue there. But the actual putting the facility together, we think, can be done in a year. Fundamentally, what we would like to think of ourselves as is the nuclear equivalent of the combustion gas turbine. If you're a utility and you need new generation, you get a combustion gas turbine that anymore is like an off-the-shelf purchase. If we get our module certified and we get the manufacturing set up, we'd like to have our plant function in the same way.
But you won't need a pipeline and you won't have any emissions.
Exactly. But it will have the same economic advantages of, you know, off-the-shelf mass production and simplicity.
Yeah, and 50 cent per million BTU fuel.
Well, I'll go back to my point that if you're sitting in the chair of a CEO of a utility, it's a tough choice to make because, as I said, they're overextended on natural gas for all and for all those reasons, it's risky for them to continue to go down that path. Most of the generation for the last 15 to 20 years, new generation has been natural gas, and they just can't continue to do that for all those reasons, and they know that. So they need other alternatives.
Yeah, I've told people for about 10 years that if everybody sucks on the same pipe, it eventually collapses.
Very good.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I hope you guys have a good evening, good rest of the weekend.
Thank you very much, Rod. Nice talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Rod.
Now I'm going to shift gears a little bit. I hope you all enjoyed that discussion with Paul and Jose about really exciting new technology development, new market opportunity. As many of you know, the Atomic Show has been on the air for a long time, since March of 2006. And through that time, it's been a labor of love. I've had some good help from some great guests, some partners over the time, been given wonderful hosting assistance by the podcast network. But it's time to turn this into a little bit more professional endeavor. And there are some companies out there that have some really interesting thoughts and visions and ideas about how the nuclear business is going to move forward. And one of them has decided to sponsor the Atomic Show for a little while. So I've been talking with Entergy Workforce Development for quite a while. And they're very interested in finding the kind of people that are listening to shows like the Atomic Show. People who are looking forward, thinking about new ideas, visionary, and interested in the opportunities in producing power for people. Entergy is a traditional utility that's been around a long time, but unlike many utilities, it's got a leadership that is forward-looking and flexible. It's got people like Don Hintz who recognized well before anybody else that the stranded nuclear plants, the ones that were built one of a kind or owned by utilities that weren't really very interested in operating them, represented a really interesting investment opportunity. And he was one of the guys who convinced his company to go out and say, you know, maybe we should start accumulating these nuclear plants under an umbrella where we could bring our expertise in workforce development and our training to bear and bring up the level of operation and really make these plants into something worthwhile. And those investments have been very good to Entergy over the years. Entergy's also got neat things like a traditional pension plan where people who work there actually build up a equity in the company and have a lifetime earnings. And speaking as the son of a former utility guy, I can tell you that utility pensions are a comforting thing in a world of uncertainty. So I want to introduce you to Entergy. I want to talk to you a little bit about what they're doing and about their company and how they do business. And hopefully that'll get some of you interested in what they're doing. When you do decide to go and find out more information, all you need to do is go to www.nuclearenergycareers.com. That's all one word, Nuclear Energy Careers, and I'll put it in the show notes. It'll lead you to Entergy's website, and you can find out more, what kind of job opportunities, who they're hiring, what kind of technologies they're doing, and by the way, that can help support the show. So take care. That's all for now, and look forward to another couple hundred atomic shows in the future. Bye now.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. The way is the Adams way.
You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.